You're listening to Text Message with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And joining us this week, let it not go uncelebrated, Andrew Langson.
Hi.
What a surprise.
Isn't it just? He is, he's my brother, but he's a friend of the show. He is here talking about our first story, which we're going to get into in a few moments. Just before we do, I would like to say that I had a very interesting conversation with my mother earlier today, in which she said, she was asking me, how do I listen to the podcast? And I said, I'll send you a link. You can pop it into the Apple Podcasts app. And she said, oh, I'm not using Apple Podcasts. I use the purple app, the one with the logo that looks like an erect penis. And I said, that's the Apple Podcasts logo. And I wondered, has anyone wondered that before?
Does it look like an erect penis?
I'm just quickly firing up. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's not what my first thought was, to be honest. It looks like a person in a sound bubble. That's what I've always assumed it is. But, I mean, I guess, it's open to interpretation, that's for sure.
If you're listening and have a view on other icons that appear to be depicting a bodily part amidst a sin of the flesh, let us know. Let's get into the first story. This is why Andy's here. Sony said this week that it's going to start selling something called custom grid lines for its professional alpha cameras. In simple terms, those are the things you might see on your smartphone camera. They look a bit like lines or squares that help you frame your shots. Quite handy. Pros use them as well, and there are some use cases where you might want a more specific kind of non-symmetrical grid, framing a passport photo or an ID card or something. Now, you might wonder, why exactly are we talking about this? The reason is because Sony said it is going to charge people who want to use these custom grid lines $149, which is well over 100 quid. It's close to 150 quid. Yeah. To load up to four of them at once, which you still need to make yourself. Little PNGs onto your pro camera. So, in short, it's a very expensive in-app payment for something that, to me at least, and apparently to Ian in his indignation, sounds like something that at least should be free. In fact, when I read this story on Sony's kind of corporate blog, it looked to me like someone in Sony's camera department took a little look at the guys across the fence in PlayStation and said, people seem to like spending £400 on a console and then £60 on a game, and they still spend pound after pound on in-game stuff. Maybe we should do this in our cameras. So in my moment of confusion and Ian's predictable indignation, I do what I normally do, which is text Andy, my brother, a professional photographer and editor-at-large for CNET, Andrew Langson. Give us the dirt.
Tell us we're wrong on this.
No,
our indignation is outrageous.
No, you're not wrong to be absolutely furious about how much this is costing, because this really is like a feature that I don't think Sony can really justify charging this much for. Well, I mean, it can because it is, but you can do this already for free on other cameras. I shoot a lot of video with the Blackmagic cinema camera. That already has this built in. It's not something you have to pay extra for. It comes in the box. But also, in another way, it's Sony. They're very good at charging a lot of money for these little extras, as Nate said, with the PlayStation. And when I looked at buying a little viewfinder for a compact camera, and that was £400 or £500. So everything is always going to come with a little extra cost. But look at it a little bit kind of like DLC for a game. You know, you have the base game, but then you can upgrade it with additional things, additional storylines, additional quests and things for a fee. And that is kind of what this is. Other companies have done it as well. Panasonic did something called the Filmmaker upgrade for one of its full-frame cameras, where it added a lot more to the table, including things like Vlog and various other pro filming codecs and quality adjustments and things like that, and that was about $200. But
I want to get that more though.
Well, like, that's the value thing. Add. That is exact. Well, that's the thing. That literally does take your camera that little bit further and allow you to do things in a different way. Whereas what Sony is done with this, arguably, it doesn't. The main use case for these kinds of things are for the very like high volume turnaround production companies, maybe like e-commerce sites where you need very specific layouts of products or people, and so you need these custom grids. And essentially Sony's like, well, high volume e-commerce, there's a lot of money there, we can therefore charge big bucks for it. So
now
I am a little on the fence.
So I could sort of see it if you were a sort of video person and you were doing regular videos for YouTube and you wanted to do vertical video for TikTok and you did a custom frame line so that you could see when something was in both the vertical frame and the horizontal frame, even though that's a really weird way of doing it. And actually, there's no real reason to do it that way. But I could sort of kind of maybe see the argument. That may be who they're aiming it at, to be honest. But
this seems
gaffer tape exists and you can just do your own frame lines with that.
The thing is, the issue I've got with this and the reason I kind of wanted to talk about it isn't because of any specific feature or whether or not it's worth having. It's more that we've seen this almost mission creep of non-software companies. And I mean, I know Sony is a software company, but we're talking about a product here, a camera, usually very expensive cameras if it's in the alpha range, sort of slipping in and sometimes under the guise of an experiment, what is essentially a microtransaction for something that really should be in there already. I would point you to the BMW, which I think's reverse course on
they
this now.
They walked it back.
But they were at one point planning to charge $18 a month to use the heated seat feature in the car that you have already paid for.
Yeah, with the heated seat hardware built in.
It's already there. And it wasn't even a one-off. It was every single month you would have to pay $18 to heat your seats, you know, the best part of £15. Mm. Now, they relatively recently, within the last couple of months, I think said, okay, we're not going to do that. And good. And I think the reason they said that was because of the massive outrage. But it's a slippery slope. And we're seeing this all over the place now where it's, well, can we slip in a subscription here or a micropayment here? And for the longest time, it was sort of a confine of games. And then it became apps. And then it quickly became hardware. And now we're seeing it in essentially like pay extra for some firmware and not even particularly useful firmware.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. I'm sure it's useful, but it's not worth 150 quid.
Yeah, that's kind of that it is a worrying trend, but I think it also worries me more in the fact that it allows companies to continue to essentially put out half-baked products with the promise of more updates to come. It's something that obviously we see in things all the time, and particularly in games. I mean, God, like, you know, we can remember how bad Cyberpunk was, and it's only really now that it's at a point of being enjoyably playable. Nate, do not argue with that. But I worry that it allows Sony and others probably to essentially put out cameras that are really should be in beta phase and simply just like pump out firmware updates down the line, which is okay to a degree. As long as when those updates arrive, they're not something that you then have to pay for.
Yeah. Mm. I'm not completely opposed to the idea of being like, well, if you've got the feature and the product is launching, then you should get all the software that is available for that product. If you then want to get things that are only available for the next product, that's annoying in its own way. And Apple does that a lot. It restricts things to only the latest hardware, even though the previous generation could technically run it. But I find that somehow less annoying than the idea of saying it's going to come with this new one and it'll run on the one you've got and the code is in there, but you have to pay more to unlock it if you want to use it. Because that's what this kind of feels a bit like to me, and it doesn't feel like this tiny little feature was so expensive to develop that
they
have to justify it by saying, well, this is how we recoup the investment, or this is how we make the product cheaper in the first place. That's one of the options that companies have, I think, to get around this is saying, well, yeah, but if we charge individually, a bit like Ryanair charges for every, you know, every visit to the toilet that you want to take. I don't know if that's true, but you know what I mean?
No, like they don't do that, but they do other things.
Every little bit of the puzzle is charged extra for if you want to see the complete jigsaw.
You want to get
jigsaw.
On the plane? Well, then you're going to have to pay extra for that.
Yeah.
Am I right in thinking, though, that most of your outrage comes from the fact that this update seems to contain very little? You know, when I mentioned the Panasonic thing, both of you were like, yeah, fair enough, that seems like a good amount.
No, it's not. I mean, apologies if I didn't make it clear. I'm not particularly annoyed about the feature itself. It's more a case of being annoyed that micropayments are slipping into things like cameras.
Well, I wouldn't describe this as a micropayment either. I do.
But relative to the cost of the camera itself, you know, these bodies can go for several thousand dollars. Lenses go for several thousand dollars. And if I'm then having to pay $100, $150 for an extra bit of firmware, I would say relative to the overall cost, that is a micropayment. But it feels like a slippery slope. I think we should be cross. I think we should be.
Well, and also they're opening themselves up a little bit here because... what's going to happen is that people are going to work out how to get around this and do it for free. They're going to do custom firmwares and stuff like that. And because, you know, there will have been some outrage generated by this, it's more likely that people who can code and people who are adept at tweaking firmwares are much more likely to look at this and go, well, we can unlock this, grab ourselves some internet kudos, and there's nothing Sony can do.
You're absolutely right, Ian, and that was a point I was gonna make, and that was the case with Canon's 5D and its 6D, and that there are various things that it should be able to do that Canon simply didn't let you do. But there was a big, like essentially like rooting your camera. It was called Magic Lantern, I think, and that let you install it into the camera. It didn't really change anything, but it did open up some new features. And I used it because one of the features I wanted to do was use my Canon 5D, my 6D at the time, as a webcam. But if you plugged an HDMI cable into it, you got all of the text on screen, you know, all of your like aperture info. You didn't get what's called a clean HDI output, but using Magic Lantern allowed you to do that, even though it's something that should just be in the software.
Yes.
But Canon specifically did not allow you to do that on the 6D because it was a lower level model. That was a feature that you could only do, I think, on the 5D and above, so which was annoying. But this software existed and I downloaded it for free and it worked fine. I mean, I'm sure, you know, there's all problems with warranties and whatnot, but you're right, that does encourage people to do that. So maybe that's what Sony's going to be looking at. Also, we've talked about these are on very expensive cameras going, and these are features for pros making a lot of money. Now, really, those are the sort of people that Sony should be courting with, frankly, better customer service by saying, hey, you need these features? Here they are. Continue, please, buying and using our equipment. Not, oh, you need a new feature to do your job? $200, please. It's a bit of a slap in the face. And frankly, if I were these companies doing this stuff, I'd be looking at Sony thinking, is this a company I want to continue to hitch my wagon to?
Do they maybe think that they're safe in doing that because to change from Sony to Canon or Nikon or something means potentially replacing your entire library of lenses, which is extraordinarily expensive to do?
I mean, you know, they're all resaleable. Like, you know, lenses don't, as a rule, fluctuate that much in the second-hand market. I mean, you'd lose some money, but they're still valuable things. You know, and I mean, you could certainly make the argument that people will want to go to other companies. I mean, I think for the first time probably ever, Nikon's a bit competitive in video again, or is for the first time. So, you know, but you know, they've never had more competition. Plus, people have got phones that are very close to being as good for video, like the iPhone, for example. It's pretty good for video now. So
you're
definitely
going to be angering some directors of photography out there.
Well, no, sure, because obviously we're not talking about the same level. But but you know, for the people who use those cameras professionally, I think what you've said, what's been said, is probably right. $149 is small when, you know, a license for I don't know, 4K from 1080p back in the day might have been a few thousand quid or dollars, you know, like that. I remember Sony had those early cameras that I can't remember what the model number was, but they were 1080p internal recording, but you could firmware upgrade them to 4K via the SDI out, and it was not a cheap upgrade, I don't think, but you were getting something for it. You were getting, you know, a load of extra resolution that was on the sensor but couldn't be recorded internally because it was too complicated and would have caused too much heat or whatever. But, you know, I don't think we're talking about cameras broadly used by very high-end people. We're talking about sort of the middle of the market. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. Andy would know more.
Andy would know more. Andy is probably about to head out to photograph some aurorae, I believe. So you get the last word, Andy, if you have anything to add on this, and let people know where they can find some of your work if they want to look into your
work. Sorry for my silence. My last word, I agree. When you said people should be angry, I just think people should be cautious. Like this, I don't necessarily think that this isn't such a major feature that people are going to be pissed off about not having, nor is it something that Sony originally promised and is now charging as an upgrade. But I do agree with you that it is a potentially slippery slope that we should be aware of not encouraging.
And by the way, Sony does point out that when this goes live in about 3 months, you'll need a license for every camera. So it's not even like you can buy one for an account and use it on all of your SLRs. If you have two, which most professional photographers will have more than one camera, prepare to be paying this for every single one of those cameras.
Okay, maybe be quite angry. There's my conclusion. Yes, thank you for having me on for this segment. You can find me online on social channels with @BatteryHQ. More importantly, you can follow and subscribe my photography YouTube channel, which is Andrew Langson Photography.
Do that.
Definitely do. We'll include a link in the show notes and all the usual places. It's well worth looking at some great videos on there. Obviously, I'm biased, but the views...
Well, I'm not, and I think they're brilliant videos too.
Well, thanks, Andy. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy your aurorae, and for anyone who wants to let us know your thoughts on this, do send us an email, of course. hello@uktechshow.com.
I don't know how you work. I don't know what your days are filled with or how you operate, but I wanted to raise the point of Evernote with you because, yes, founded in 2004, it was purchased at the start of this year by an Italian app developer who I believe is called Bending Spoons, which is an unusual name, especially for an Italian company. Mm. Anyway, it's under fire because the owner is now limiting free accounts to one workbook and 50 individual notes. Now, Evernote's a phenomenon. People have loved it for a really long time and swear by it. And so, I mean, I wanted to ask you what you were using for notes, but tell you that I've used both NoteShelf and Apple's Notes, which are both pretty good, to be fair. NoteShelf is great with the Apple Pencil. You can search your own handwriting. I never thought I'd see the day, Nate. It's a revelation. You know, you write with your handwriting and somehow it knows what you've written. I mean, I know that Apple has that functionality too, but even so, I was very impressed. And I did buy that app because it was so good. It has flexibility in terms of being able to import PDFs of like, you know, different styles of notepad. So if you want to do like journaling and stuff like that, there's some, it's a bit limited, but there are some options for you to, you know, make notes in a way that suits you, which I thought was a pretty good and worthwhile thing to have, because I was going to do calendar based, you know, note taking so that I always knew what was coming up and what I wanted to do. Unfortunately, it didn't really work out for me. So really, I'm back on Apple Notes now, which I like and find very useful. Both of them Well, Note Shelf is a one-off purchase, I believe. I think there might be a free version. And Apple Notes is obviously free, but I don't know what you're using or how you feel about this, once again, gouging of price.
Well, you've blown my mind a little bit because I didn't realize that Evernote was basically 20 years old.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
insane,
that's,
isn't it?
I might have guessed at a push 15, but to think that it's going to have its 20th birthday in under a month,
yeah,
at least based on the year.
Well, based on when the company was founded, but I think it came out pretty quickly. But I mean, what are we talking about? What did it start on? It must have started on the internet as something people used with their laptops, because this is before smartphones, right?
Oh yeah, I mean 2004 was. Predates the iPhone by 4 years
before the iPhone. Well, 3 years.
3 years, but it didn't have an app store to begin with. So really, four years. And I remember Evernote launching when we got the apps. Everyone started getting very excited about Evernote when it became an app for the iPhone and Android. And that happened when I think late on in our tenure at CNET. So that would have been towards maybe 2009, possibly. But either way, it's amazing. This change seems, I think, a little bit short-sighted. From what I can gather, though, a massive number of people who used to use and swear by Evernote have migrated to other things. Some, as you say, moved to Apple's Notes, which for a long time was extremely basic and lacked even rudimentary formatting. It was basically a glorified plain text editor. But over the years, Apple's added a lot of functionality and even collaboration and stuff that makes it a lot better. And that's what I use for all of my notes. But also, along that, you've got things like Microsoft OneNote. A lot of people swear by OneNote, really.
Oh God, really. Not me, mate.
But
not me.
But if you're an Office 365 customer, it makes a lot of sense to at least consider that, because I think so. It's a very good.
It's awful.
It's a lot of people like it.
Maybe I'm not using it right.
And it integrates well with the Office suite. So I think there's good reason there.
I will just say that nothing integrates well with the Office suite, not even Office. But anyway.
Captain Kremen, as a side note, says in live chat he's using Synology DS Notes.
That's weird. I mean, is that like a NAS synced local notes thing? Like, does it sync to your Synology NAS? That's all I know of Synology, really. Whilst we're waiting for that answer, shall I tell you how much it costs?
Evernote, yes.
Yeah. It's $15 a month for a personal plan. Yeah, that's with 10 gigs of monthly uploads. And you can, well, this says, yeah, so you can double it to 20 gigs. That's $18. That pricing is weird, right? It's like a $3 difference in price for double the storage. Anyway.
Well, no, that's they just want to upsell you. Oh, if you're spending 15, you might as well spend 18 and get twice the storage.
I would have said it would be better to charge 12 for the personal and then go for 15 for the double storage one. That feels to me like a more, I don't know, it feels better. But even so, they are both really expensive plans. Like that, you're talking about, that's more than, where does that sit in the Apple, like, iCloud plan?
Well, iCloud.
That's quite a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, I think you used to be able to get 2 terabytes of iCloud for about £8.
Yeah, that's what I'm on.
Microsoft's storage is on par with Apple's. I think you get more for free with Microsoft, and I think with Office 365 you get a terabyte included as part of that, which is significantly more than 10 or 20 gigabytes. I think it's weird, and it's a sad state, because the reason Evernote was so good was because it was more than just a note-taking app. You could throw anything into it. You could throw JPEGs, PDFs, websites. You had things like the Clipper, where you could just clip things from apps and websites and they'd appear there, and everything became searchable, and it would do optical character recognition so you could search within the content of attachments, which was extremely useful. And it was multi-platform. It worked just as well on the web as it did on mobiles. They had great apps for tablets, for Windows, for Mac. Like, it was just a really well thought out and extremely good, flexible, note-taking app. And now it's got to this point where, as you're saying, it's a paltry, like the one workbook, which is essentially one folder, is not maybe a massive issue. But, and 50 notes, I mean, all right, just use one note and just keep adding to the bottom or adding to the top of it. And I think Evernote said in its announcement of this change that most free users are under that limit anyway. And that's fair, but sure. I find the pricing, and not to get on a rant about pricing today, because really the last segment wasn't so much about pricing or features; it was about micropayments in big expensive hardware. But this just seems, in a world of OneNote and Apple Notes, and I'm sure Google Drive is called Keep, isn't it?
I don't know.
Which I think a lot of people like. You know, it's really difficult to compete. And I don't think Evernote's going to necessarily do itself any favors by doing this. What I would say is that Evernote, to its disservice, I suppose, made it very easy to export all of your stuff out of it, and Apple made it very easy to import all of your Evernotes into itself, as I believe OneNote and Keep do. So that's one thing, but woe betide anyone who wants to export their Apple Notes into anything other than PDFs. It's like my back passage. It's a one-way street. So sorry for that. I apologize.
Yeah, I don't know what you were thinking, but anyway, and I know you don't want to go on about pricing, but we have just. I mean, again, it's like, why does everything have to be a subscription? I'm just tired of it, Nate. So tired.
Because it's cloud, and cloud comes with a cost, and you have to justify it. And forecastable revenue is very attractive for businesses and investors. Like, that's just a sad reality. But this even a subscription. I mean, could you imagine an Evernote that costs, I don't know, £3 a month? Imagine how many people would sign up for £3 a month.
Well, I'm going to have to imagine it, because it's not going to be anywhere near that, is it? So
a couple of other things, though, that I think are relevant to this, more broadly speaking, is that I have actually been thinking an awful lot recently about note-taking and organization, and a couple of things have come onto my radar in recent both weeks and months. One that's worth flagging is Apple's going to release this journaling app, which bizarrely is only going to be on the iPhone, to begin with, which I find completely baffling. Why a journaling tool wouldn't be available on the web or on desktop or on an
iPad. At least on an iPad. That, I mean, iPad's where you want it, because that's the ideal medium to be note-taking with a pencil.
You'd have thought so. If you're doing a journal, which is essentially a diary where you are... It's basically notes, but way more graphic and date-based, and it looks...
You don't want to be typing that into your phone, do you, really?
I think it's a missed opportunity out of the gate not to go all in on that. But that's one thing. But I've also been seeing Kate over the last couple of years really teach me a lot about the world of journaling in general. Paper, actual journal. This is like the internet, mate, but made out of trees.
What?
I'm not sure I
understand the concept of that.
It's odd. It's these things. It's like you get them. They call them pages, right? And you write on both sides and you fold them over. Kind of like, it's a bit like when you flip through like a Kindle ebook or something. You know how it looks like the page is flapping around a bit. It's like they've made a real version of that out of a tree. Okay. It's interesting. And I've seen a lot of these people use these journals and design them in a really beautiful way, and put a lot of effort into bullet journaling and keeping things simple and organized and tracking their hours and their days and their weeks and their months. And it really has got me thinking that although I've not found a way to integrate a paper diary into my life, because I need to be able to shout stuff into the ether and have a digital assistant hear it and put it in all my things, so it's all there, and that's how I get things done. Mm-hmm. I do think that you could probably take a lot of what goes into a handwritten journal and a to-do sort of system, and I could embed that in whatever app I'm using, whether it's OneNote or Apple Notes or whatever else. You certainly used to be able to do that with Evernote. It doesn't feel like it's as easy to do it with Apple Notes. Maybe it's easy to do with OneNote. Maybe I should be considering that. But I found this Evernote, 20 years of Evernote, 50 note limit. It just feels like such a long, hard journey for that business.
Yes, and I mean, yeah, and I get that you can't operate things for free. It's not a sustainable business model. I just think it's ill thought out pricing structure, and I don't know. And people will support things that they believe in. You know, people support us as a podcast. You know, we don't make them. So people do like to contribute. I find that myself with things that I, you know, support. It's nice sometimes to give something back for something that's served you well. And I just think that this sort of forces people's hand, and it's going to get everyone's back up, and they're all just going to go to something else, which is a shame. Captain Kremen confirmed that yes, indeed, the Synology DS Notes syncs with your NAS and has a Chrome plugin and things like that. It's pretty cool. So yeah, there's lots of options out there. I quite like Notion for a bit, but I couldn't really make it work for me, but I like the idea of it because it's a proper database.
I know Kate and her colleagues absolutely swear by an app called Todoist, okay, which is less of a note-taking app and more of a planner, more of a task manager, a bit like Things, you know, which our old colleague and boss, I think, Michael Parsons, used to swear by. I'm not sure if it was Things he used, but it was this getting things done method of management, which was quite interesting.
Right. Okay.
So that's Todoist. And also Captain Kremen actually asked how long do batteries last in these journals. It's a good question. These paper things, I'm not sure. I don't even know where you put a battery in them.
Are they mains powered? Do you just plug them into the wall?
I just assume because they're made out of trees, it's the same idea as some kind of photosynthesis. It's solar.
Maybe solar. Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's probably it, isn't it?
I think it must be. Well, we'll keep finding out. If anyone knows how books are powered, that would be great. A couple of other comments before we move on. Rich and Russ says, I didn't like things as you had to pay for each app or device separately for things. This is not Evernote, and that's true. You have to pay, and they're not cheap either. We sound like we're hating on things for costing money. That's really not the message here. It's just
don't they have to be proportionately priced for the, you know, like if you charge £100 for something, it's probably still worth it, but you're just cutting off a huge percentage of the audience that just simply does not have that kind of money. You know, I mean, sure. And also, what, you know, why, if you're a customer, you're a customer, you shouldn't have to pay for each device. It should be an account thing. And I don't know, you know, yes, sure. There's different ways of doing things.
And Al Struthers, good old Al, says Microsoft To Do, which does the same thing, is also part of Office 365. So
yes.
It'd be good to get some feedback from listeners. hello@uktechshow.com, how you organize your notes, particularly if you are incorporating a paper diary into your digital workflow. I would welcome some advice on that, because so far I haven't found a way of doing it that I like. I would like to thank everybody who's currently listening to us live. We've got some great live listeners right now. We had Luna earlier. We've got Al, Captain Kremen, of course. Fernando's here. Kate, Mike's here. Rich and Russ. And we've got many more people supporting us as well. And you can do that by going to Patreon. Patreon.com/UK Tech. Get the extended version. Listen to us live. Get the back catalogue. Go ad-free. All that good stuff. What you might say is it's a little bit like we give you the camera for free. But if you want the upgraded brilliant firmware, then it will cost you a subscription.
Again.
It's a micropayment. But the difference is Sony charges you for the camera. You can listen to us for free if you want. And also it'd be great if you left us a review if you do so, because that's honestly how we find our audience. So thanks to everyone who's supporting us. We're going to move into our third discussion story of the week now, if you are one of those backers. And it's all about a year of ChatGPT. Please welcome. That's going to do it for this week, Ian. It's been a great chat. It's been nice to have Andy on the show, of course, as well. I haven't had him on for some time. Do you have any plans for this this upcoming weekend, Ian?
Well, I was hoping it was going to snow.
It is in London, I think.
Oh, good. Well, if it does snow, going out in the snow, maybe.
Hmm. Snow plans if that doesn't happen, then.
No, I'll stay in and watch TV. No, I'm sure I'll find something productive to do.
I'm sure a man with two children and a house can think of something to do.
I bought a sofa. I mean, it's not coming till next Tuesday, but God. Even so, it's been nearly 3 years I've been in this house and I've been sitting on a donated sofa for all that time. Well, I haven't. I just don't sit on it.